Chapter 1, Ash and Dust. I suppose if I have to start somewhere, it would be with the day I was reborn. The first thing I knew was hunger. Not the kind of hunger that sends you to the pantry to find a quick snack. Not even the kind of hunger that slowly wears you down as you starve to death. I mean the kind of hunger that tears at your very soul, consuming your every thought. My world was hunger. Everything else was a mere flicker of light in the background. Then my hunger deranged mind caught the one thing out there that mattered to it. Love. It latched onto the intoxicating sensation, pushing me toward a single, simple objective.
Feed.
I surged forward. In the distance, past the hunger, I could feel a body, my body, move in response. It felt so remote, so detached from the hunger, the sweet sense of love that had become my entire world. I pushed forward, and something resisted me. Numbly, instinctively, I lowered my head and pushed again. I was only vaguely aware of the cool sensation that met my horn as I drew a little closer to my prize. Clumsy limbs pushed and flailed as the sensation spread, and I flowed forward. I felt pinpricks all along my body as everything twisted and turned with my movement, the world momentarily losing all sense of cohesion, then solidifying abruptly as I struck something hard. Past the laser-like focus of my hunger-addled mind, I only barely recognized that it was the ground. Thick fluid coursed over my body as I reoriented on the love I sensed. My hooves wobbled and slid against the hard ground as I coughed up copious amounts of fluid. But I ignored the difficulties of my body. I scrambled blindly forward, over inconsequential obstacles, until I fell upon the source of the tantalizing emotion. I didn't know what exactly I grasped in my hooves. It was small, hard, and most importantly, filled with love. I fed. I drew in every little bit of love, and the terrible hunger relaxed its grip on my mind. Devoid of the powerful, all-consuming drive, my head sunk to the wet ground, feeling so incredibly heavy. Then, everything was gone once again. To this day, I still cannot remember the dream that had followed. The only thing I remember was the voice at the center of my world, my queen, Queen Ephema. I don't remember what she said in my dream. I just remember that she was there, speaking, and that her voice was happy and kind. I wish I could remember more. I like to think that the dream was of the day I had left the hive for my first solo assignment. The day I had truly stepped up to embrace the mantle of infiltrator. The day that I could finally return all the effort she and the rest of the hive had invested in me. Queen Ephema had spoken to me many times before, as she did with all of her children, but that day was special. That day, she told me how proud she was of me, how happy she was for me. I felt as light as a feather at her kind words, a happiness that I clung to during my long months away from the hive. I don't know for sure if that's what I dreamed of, but I like to think it was. It's how I want to remember her. Sound was the first sense to creep its way into my reluctantly conscious mind. I slowly became aware of a quiet, repetitive squeaking nearby. Somewhere in the distance, a klaxon sounded, muffled and echoing, mixed with indistinct words from some faraway speaker. As consciousness returned, I began to notice the soft hum of electronics all around me, and the steady dripping of liquid. A faint glow caught my attention. A ghostly flicker of orange barely seen through my eyelids, just on the edge of my perception. After a few moments of drowsy contemplation, I finally opened my eyes. A wavering orange splash of light weaved back and forth around a blob of green light. It took several slow blinks before my vision started to focus. The wavering orange light was cast by an emergency light. It squeaked as it spun in place, casting its rotating light across a bare concrete wall and filling the dark room with deep, flickering shadows. The green I saw was the light shining through the deflated remains of the chrysalis I had just escaped. Now, I want to clarify for any who might be confused. That's lowercase chrysalis, a changeling cocoon, not uppercase chrysalis, the changeling queen. I figure it's probably clear from context, but I wouldn't want anyone to think I came from her. After contemplating the limp, dripping remains of the chrysalis, I raised my head. Thick fluids dribbled from my chin as I took in more of the room. The first detail I caught stopped me cold. On either side of the cocoon I had emerged from hung many more. The first one I looked at was still full, but the fluid was dark and murky. The spinning light cast shadows across the empty husk of a dead changeling floating within it. A faint flicker of adrenaline, cold and acidic, began to chase away the remaining sleepiness. The husk sat still, suspended in the dark mucus of its own decay. Vacant eyes stared out. The empty carapace tangled up in wires that attached to it in several places. I stared numbly at it for several seconds before I swallowed. Despite the fluid still slowly dripping from me, my mouth felt dry, and looked back to the chrysalis I had escaped. Similar wires hung from the gash my horn had torn in the clear membrane, the pads that had attached them to my body dangling. I looked slowly over the line of cocoons, 10 in total. Only one other was still full, and its occupant had fared no better. The rest were torn and deflated, dangling in tattered ribbons from the pipes above. A couple more husks hung in midair, entangled in the remains of the chrysalises that had held them. Others had fallen to the ground. Some, I realized in horror, had survived their internment, only to die shortly after gaining their freedom. One of the obstacles I had blindly stumbled past was a dead husk of another changeling. Sprawled out on the floor as if it had been trying to reach the same life-giving store of love I had just devoured. The empty eyes of the exoskeleton stared in my direction, as if blaming me for her death. I laid my head down, eyes shutting again. My heart rate and breathing had accelerated, and I focused on breathing slowly and deeply. I had to focus and stay calm. I had a responsibility. My hive had invested years of training, preparing me to deal with stressful and dangerous situations. I hadn't anticipated ever finding myself in such a horrible situation, but I knew I couldn't let that stop me. I owed all of them that much, and more. Especially the ones who lay dead, where I had lived. So I wrestled down the feeling of fear and despair that clawed at the back of my mind. I slowly relaxed, stilling the trembling that sought to take over my body. I lay there in the room as I focused on the quiet, repetitive noises all around me. I'm not sure how long I simply lay there in that shallow puddle of fluids. I knew I couldn't stay there forever, but I had to eventually get up and deal with whatever had happened. That was slightly complicated by having no idea what had happened. Amand was still slow and groggy from the induced hibernation within the chrysalis. My memory was spotty at best. I needed to get up, figure out what had happened, and find my way from there. But still, I just lay there, ignoring the world around me as if by refusing to acknowledge it, it might cease to exist. I ignored the empty husks of my dead siblings. I ignored the uncomfortable object beneath my chest, which I had collapsed atop after my meager feast. I ignored the form that lay beside me, glimpsed in the corner of my eye, a large form, still and silent, looming over me. I didn't want to look. I wanted to lay there as if I could pretend there was nothing wrong. It was tempting, but I knew I couldn't. I owed it to my hive, my queen. I had to look. I had to face the truth, no matter how it hurt. So I opened my eyes again, shakily raising my head, and turned to look at the empty husk of Queen Ephema. Even in death, she still looked regal, laid out with her head laying against the concrete wall. I trembled, giving a weak sob around the tightness in my throat. I might have even cried a little. Part of me wanted to just give up, to curl up beside her, close my eyes, and join her. My queen was dead. My hive, likely, as well. Why else would she still be lying here, uncared for? It was a disgrace, a defilement. No changeling would have permitted this. Had they been able to do anything about it? Another dead changeling lay beside her, a foreleg draped across one of the queens. The gaping eyes showed me, in more detail than I could have ever hoped or wanted, the emptiness that lay within the exoskeleton. Everything that had made them who they were had decayed away long before I had woken, leaving nothing but empty husks behind. I looked to the other changeling laying beside the queen. I wondered if she had given up, preferring death at her queen's side over carrying on such a horrible burden. I quickly cast the thought aside. Whoever she had been, she deserved better than such dark thoughts. A sudden fit of coughing racked my body, wet and phlegmy. I managed to cough up another mouthful of liquid, spitting it to the floor. Recovering from the coughing fit, I suddenly realized the lump under my chest was the queen's other foreleg. Ignoring the weakness in my limbs, I quickly scrambled to my hooves. It wasn't out of disgust or fear from contacting the corpse. It simply seemed disrespectful to treat her remains as if they were a common cushion. As I stood, a flicker of light and a quiet clatter drew my attention down to the concrete floor by my hooves. A crystal the size of one of my fangs lay there, reflecting the spinning light. I knew immediately what it was. A love crystal. A wonderful little device for storing, as you might guess, love. A small one like it could hold enough love to keep a changeling fed for weeks, but this one lay empty. I had consumed what little love was left in it. Several more lay encircled on my queen's forelegs as if she were protecting them. All were empty, not even the faintest trace of love remaining. Had they been consumed? Or had their love leaked away like a spoiling apple? How long could those crystals hold love? I saw it as an offering, one final gift to her children. I didn't doubt it for a second. She lay there as if she knew what was coming, and still she sought to provide for us. I shuddered, eyes tearing up again. Her gift was the only reason I was alive. Even with that gift, my hunger still had its claws sunk in deep. I needed to find a source of love, soon, or her gift would be wasted. A few days, maybe. even refraining from the use of magic, won't even last a week. Only then did I notice the object held between her hooves. I stared at it through blurry eyes for several seconds before I realized what it was. A data store. Small, sturdy, able to hold tremendous amounts of digital data. And she held it, as if offering it to me. I lurched forward only to halt myself. Then, slowly and reverently, I took the data store gently in my hooves and lifted it away. A few droplets of water followed from the device. I held it like some holy relic, staring at it as if I could read its contents through my rapt attention. Whatever was in there, my queen had held on to it, protecting it even more than the crystals she had left for us. A message for us, her daughters, who had survived her. I needed to know what secrets it held. Which meant I needed a computer. I wiped the hoof across my eyes, managing only to smear around the fluids clinging to my carapace, and looked about, finally taking in the room around me. The chrysalises filled the center of the room, hung from the exposed piping, and arranged in a semicircle around a slightly raised central platform. Machinery was arranged behind and beside each one, with cables and tubes leading to the various cocoons. Or, in many cases, splayed out across the ground where they had fallen upon their cocoons failing. Most of those loose cables lay in puddles, but not all of it came from the dripping, just-vacated chrysalis. The walls were stained from the trickling of water running over them, and drops fell from some of the pipes, and from the rusted-over sprinkler head set beside the spinning light. Along the back wall lay pieces of torn-apart machinery. Several empty, egg-shaped devices, large enough for a fully-grown changeling to fit comfortably inside, had been partially disassembled. Their remains lay discarded in a heap. Cables twisted like electronic entrails. What really caught my attention, however, was a faint green glow of a terminal. It was the first good news I had received since waking up, and I stumbled my way over to it, doing my best to ignore the protests of my legs. My muscles ached from disuse. The ache made me think. Magical energies within a pod slowed muscle atrophy, but did not eliminate it. My legs were already feeling the strain. I trembled slightly as I moved, a burning fatigue spreading up through my shoulders. I had been in that chrysalis for a long time, but how long? A glance at the pod I was hobbling past told me it was a very long time indeed. Many months at the very least. Years, most likely. My mind couldn't help pondering the changelings within. How long had it taken for her to die, and then rot away to an empty shell? I shuddered, which quickly devolved into another coughing fit. A bit more of the viscous fluid dribbled from my lips as I recovered. I did my best to ignore the growing ache in my gut, taking small comfort that the fluids within a changing pod were not foul-tasting. It had little flavor, like water with a hint of salt and sugar mixed in. Once I felt sturdy enough, I continued past the pods to the terminal. I needed answers, and information is a powerful weapon. Right then, I was disarmed. I needed to fix that. I needed to arm myself with knowledge so I could begin to figure out what to do next. And to tell the truth, I could desperately use something to distract me from the death that surrounded me. Something, hopefully, that might give some sense that things could, somehow, be made right. I faced the terminal screen, ignoring how the brief trip had already rendered me short of breath. Stress, I reasoned to myself, as I wiped away the thick layer of dust on my screen and hit a key. The terminal woke up with a faint whir and hum, the blank glow of the screen replaced by a simple message. Welcome back, user. Cool bugs. I choked out a weak laugh, halfway between humor at the login and crippling depression at finding amusement while surrounded by my dead hive mates. I'm pretty sure my mind was not terribly stable at the time. I forced myself to swallow my grief and continue on. With another press of a button, the welcome message disappeared, replaced by a logo in monochrome green text. Crystal Life Technologies, for a better future. Resuming session. The terminal hummed for a few more moments as it worked, while I considered the name. It was vaguely familiar, though I couldn't quite place it. The logo vanished before I could remember, presenting me with an alert message and a very rude bleep. Danger. SA pod number 4. Experimental. Failure. Biomed control system. Failure. Life sign monitoring. Failure. Check occupant immediately. A quick count placed my crystals as the fourth from the left. At least there was some small comfort that the computer was concerned with my well-being, for what little that was worth. I pressed the key to continue, and the warning was replaced by a new one. Warning. Primary power system, failure. Emergency power systems, activated. Containment locks, released. All personnel, evacuate immediately. Containment locks? I looked to the door of the room, standing open. It was one of those heavy, powered doors, the kind that probably weighed 500 pounds and could stop a good-sized explosion. My gaze drifted to my queen, resting just beside the door. Was that what was responsible for this? Had she awoken, as I had, only to be trapped in here by this containment lock? I swallowed around the returning lump in my throat and hit the key again. Caution. External environment is not safe. External radiation at 168% of safety threshold. Minor, atmospheric contamination detected. Moderate, water contamination detected. Environmental seal compromised. Structural breach detected. Environmental isolation cannot be established. All personnel, evacuate immediately. I was trembling again. This was not the good news I was hoping for. A final press of the key cleared away the last of the warning messages, returning the terminal to its standard interface. I ignored the message that opened automatically to look for the time and date display. I stared at it in confusion until I realized that there was some sort of error. The time and date display was showing nonsense. For some reason, the terminal thought it was a couple centuries in the future. A little disheartened by the lack of sensible information, I read over the displayed message. It was titled, Daily Report, and consisted of an extensive list of technical problems. The first entries were the condition of the cocoons, or SA pods, experimental, as it titled them. 9 reported complete failures, the last reporting several warnings of degrading systems. Other warnings noted problems for the rest of what seemed to be a sizable facility, such as a pressure failure in the fire suppression system, flooding in level 2, complete failure of the water processing and pumping system, and the failure of 2 of 3 air intake and purification systems. The only thing of interest I caught in the long list of failures was that 3 of the 8 spark generators had apparently still been working when the daily report was generated. Judging by the warning I had received on starting up the terminal, they had all failed simultaneously today. At the bottom of the message, the clean and formatted text abruptly changed. Bugs. Wake up call. ENV external grad 1.68. ENV external air tox 0.63. ENV external water tox 3.32. ENV external air temp true. ENV external air live true. Wake up call false. Whatever it was, it looked like something crudely hacked onto the end of the existing report. I noted right away that ENV external rad. That's the warning message I had received about external radiation levels.
Whatever this was, it seemed to be making note of what conditions were like outside. And if I had to guess, deciding whether or not to wake us up based on what it found. Or, in short, it said the world outside was poison, and I shouldn't be awake yet. Really not what I wanted to hear right now, I had thought. Pretty sure now that the fact I was silently talking to the terminal within my own head was a sign I was uncomfortably close to simply losing it. An option flashed near the top of the screen, titled, New Unread Daily Reports. It was a moment of hope for me. If this terminal had been generating and storing daily reports ever since we had entered our chrysalises, the number of messages it contained should tell me how long I was gone. I hit the options, and the screen changed to a list of reports. The new messages number exploded. I was completely unsurprised when it almost instantly hit 3 digits, and only a little disappointed when it added a 4th digit barely a second later. I sighed, slumping a little, but I was hardly surprised. A few months was beyond optimistic. A few years was much more reasonable, given the state of the room and the decay. The number kept going. Horror started to dig at my gut as the number climbed higher and higher, refusing to stop. Years rolled by before my eyes. It hit 5 digits and my hind legs gave out. I sat down, staring numbly. My brain did some quick math completely without my bidding. Roughly 30 years, and still it counted higher. I continued to stare unmoving, transfixed by the impossible horror of what I was seeing. Finally, it stopped. You have 73,741 unread daily reports. Again, my brain did some quick math. If that number was correct, and I really didn't want to believe it, that was roughly 200 years. Part of me suggested that it was wrong. The terminal had the wrong date. Maybe it made up a bunch of daily reports for a bunch of days that didn't actually happen. Even at the time, I knew I was grasping at straws. But it was either that, or drowned in the realization that every changeling was dead. My hive was gone. I trembled, leaning against the terminal, and sobbed. Tears flowed down my snout as I shook. On the verge of getting up, I let out a weak, angry cry as I thumped a hoof against the terminal's housing. I was alive. My queen had gone through all this effort for us, and I was alive. If I was alive, others could be too. I couldn't just lay there, crying like some spoiled filly as I threw away my queen's gift. I pushed myself upright, doing my best to control my sobbing, and wiped my eyes again. To no better effect than the previous attempt. I hit the back button with more force than necessary, eyes narrowing as I did my best to channel all my pain into determination. I glared at the terminal like it was an enemy I needed to extract information from. A quick search turned up a socket, and I plugged in the data store. The terminal hummed again, punctuated by the occasional whine. It kept working and working. It working. After half a minute, it finally displayed a message. Error. Could not read external device. File system. Corrupted. The fire that had been growing in me died. I managed to hold on for a couple seconds against the wave of depression, but I finally buckled with a loud sob. I slid down against the terminal until I lay curled up before it, trembling and crying. My queen's final gift, and it was denied to me. My sobbing mixed with coughing as I spat up a bit more fluids, my chest aching as the muscles complained. A particularly bad coughing fit left me groaning, clutching my gut. At least it gave me something else to occupy my mind. The desperate sadness was shunted into the background as I simply focused on breathing. I think that's the moment I really returned. The moment my brain finally woke and came up to speed. The grogginess from my extended rest still left me in a faint haze, but as I focused on the burning ache in my chest and belly, my mind started to tear apart the situation, evaluating it. My crying died away as I lay there, thinking. I am on my own again, I thought. That wasn't so bad, even if the reason for it was horrific. I was an infiltrator. I worked in my own regularly, often for months at a time. I had been trained to work independently, to approach and deal with problems without the guarantee of assistance. Yes, I didn't know if anything in my hive had survived, especially if it had really been as long as the terminal claimed it had been. But I was equipped to work on my own in uncertain situations. If anything in my hive had survived, I could find it. My queen had brought us here for a purpose. She brought us here to preserve the hive. I had a mission. Slowly, I pushed myself back up onto wobbly legs. I blinked away the last of the tears, refocusing on the terminal. After a deep, steadying breath, I reached out, hitting the key to back out to the main menu once again, and started searching through the rest of the terminal. The search turned up little. There was no personal correspondence, though there were lots of research notes that flew over my head. The only thing I got out of that was a mention of suspended animation. It led me to finally recognize where I recognized Crystal Life Technologies from. The CLT was some small bit company that had managed to have dealings with 5 of the 6 ministries of the Equestrian government, thanks to its research in cryonics and suspended animation. It wasn't a big player, not even close, but those connections drew enough interest to be one of the companies we kept tabs on. Unfortunately, that recognition didn't help me any now. The terminal seemed to be used solely for research and operation of the experimental suspended animation bots. There was nothing useful to me. Didn't even have a map. I sighed as I turned away from it, looking back at the rest of the room prompted a moment of hesitation and sadness, but it faded quickly. I had cried too much already. Now was the time to act. Step 1. Survive. Considering my situation, I knew that might be a bit of a challenge all on its own. I had hardly done anything since waking, and already my body was exhausted. My magic was almost depleted, and I was sure I'd need plenty of food and water soon. I had no knowledge of what was out there, except for the vague environmental reports the terminal had provided. Sadly, of all the technical jargon and analysis the terminal had contained, none of it gave even a vague idea of what those environmental measurements actually meant. I'd have to dig around in the actual code, and I didn't have the tools for that. Not that I really needed to find details to get the idea that minor atmospheric contamination was probably a bad thing. I needed supplies, and I needed a way to carry them. I retrieved the data store, hoping that I might be able to extract the data it had held with the proper tools. The love crystals were definitely coming with me, with the hope that I might someday acquire enough love that I might need to store some of it. And, if I'm entirely honest, in part because they had come from my queen. And, since I didn't want to spend more of my limited magic than absolutely necessary by levitating them all the time, I needed something to carry it all in. A quick scan of the room turned up one of those ubiquitous, wall-mounted Ministry of Peace medical boxes. The paint mostly peeled away. Half of the box was badly corroded by the years of water trickling down the wall and over it, but it would serve my purposes. It took a couple of good jerks to free it from the rusted mounting brackets, and I set it down on a table and opened the box. I do know that I had said I would do this all in a single run. However, I'm going to break this first chapter up into 2 parts, and the second part will be coming soon, hopefully within the next day. Until then, this is Rainavera,
signing off, and I hope you all enjoyed. Please leave constructive comments at the end, and I will make sure to read all of them. Thank you.